Welcome to a new episode of Templar Talks, number 6 already, and we're going to start by talking a little bit about the last concerts we have seen in the last 2 weeks. And I think I have only 2 events this time to talk about. And the first one was a bit of a strange event in Arnhem. It's one of those nights where you can just walk in, and I already knew on forehand it would be a bit alternative. But I happened to have bought a new lens for my camera, and I was like, oh, that's perfect, so I can just take it and like try it, play a little bit without anyone being bothered by it if it's not, it doesn't have to be published or whatever. I think in the end I did put a gallery up, but the first one band that was playing, I don't even call it a band, it was a duo. Well, they try to have a little bit of synth-driven music with instruments like xylophone. There's some bass, but I think if you would see it, you would probably call it bass abuse. Yeah, it was just a bit questionable. And then vocal-wise, this lady thinks she could do opera.
Oh, not my thing.
If it's done well, I could say yes, I understand it, why you want to bring it in. But I don't think she was particularly good in doing so. So yeah, I found that a bit annoying. And if you look at the whole, there was like, it doesn't seem to match with each other. It doesn't add up to a story or a song or that makes sense. It was so random, everything. So luckily they only played maybe like 20 or 30 minutes max. So it was done real fast. But yeah, it's like they both wear like masks, and then there's the opera and some instruments random put together. Yeah, I mean, I've seen bands doing this kind of genre more often, and yeah, this was just not the high level that other bands can bring with that. I think they need to figure out for themselves how to tie it all together a bit better. Yeah, so then I went to the second act. They call themselves Salon Brut. And I don't know, at some point there were some vocals in there in Dutch. I would have expected that to be French maybe. But no. Yeah, then there's this girl with a cello, and yeah, this guy with a synth and a tape player basically doing stuff. Yeah, it all came together much better. I mean, it's equally weird, but I mean, you feel like the pieces are tied together. Mm-hmm. You can see transitions. You can see that they're having a story in the soundscape. Like it makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, altogether they also played very short. I think that was in total maybe 1 hour that I actually saw music there. So it was an early evening home, I guess. But yeah, interesting, I guess.
Yeah, something different to, you know, appreciate other things more.
Yeah, it was nice. What I really like is that acts like this get an opportunity to play as well, and yes, that it's like free entry means that there's people gonna come in, although I think it was basically their families that were there and a few people that I see regularly in the Willemijn. I think they're volunteers there.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, otherwise, I don't think many people were visiting, unfortunately. But yeah, good that they get a chance to play and get an experience. And I think maybe the second one, if they keep going, they might end up in Roadburn at some point.
Oh, that's nice.
So, I mean, good for them.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you were at a festival, wasn't it?
Yeah, but before that, I almost forgot. Before that, I went to... it was a package. The first band was Siamese. And then there was the Japanese Sim. And then the American Nothing More.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was, yeah. Well, the review is on our website.
Yeah.
Siamese, it's a Danish band. It's there are some good known people in the music world, like a songwriter and I think one is a manager of other bands, so they know how it works. They're good. It sounds nice. They're a little bit different style-wise. But my camera was having a little glitch, so I was actually not focusing like I should have been focusing on them. So I liked it, but they didn't impress me that much. So maybe next time, at least they were like not like making me think that I should avoid them next time. So they're on my interest list. So that's the Danish Siamese. Then there's Sim Japanese. They're like more punk, reggae, punk, high energy, kind of jumping, Linkin Park style. I don't know. It was really good to get the people going. The people went wild. I think it's kind of fun when there's like bands touring together that are completely different from each other, but in a way still share a sort of common
common ground. And
so the audience, I think they liked all the three bands, but of course most people came for Nothing More. I think they've grown a lot in the last years, touring now, or they just finished, I'm not sure, with Electric Cowboy in Germany. So they play stadiums there, like huge places. They toured last summer all the festivals, and I think it was really good. It was high on energy. It was a good show. Sound wise was good. Performance wise was, you know, sometimes you have a singer that's just a born entertainer, you know. Even though he walks from left to right on the stage, you get entertained. I don't know how that works, but it's just like that. So yeah, that was really cool. That was my first thing I went to see.
Nice. Yeah, so on last weekend, I went to see Therion.
Yes.
I mean, I did this interview with them in, what was it, November probably. And I had a really good conversation with them. Had a little bit of after chat. So yeah, I was looking forward to see them live. They played in Enschede, which is an hour from me, so little less than an hour. And then when I arrived at the venue, I was like, okay, I have some time. I have to go back to my car to pick up something. And the website said that there would not be any support acts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already thinking, okay, but there was on the tour poster mentioned there would be one. Strange. But then the band would be having their last date with Therion that evening. So I was like, okay, maybe they had to
cancel or
quit
something.
One day earlier. Yeah, so okay, whatever. But eventually I just got in at this moment the support band started. So surprised they were there. Yeah, they were called K-Ops. I think they were from Croatia. And they were like super enthusiastic. And the vocalist is very charismatic. I mean, he really speaks to the people in the audience. He like addresses everyone. That's kind of cool. And I think musically, yeah, it was good. That bit melodic metal. It was good, but it wasn't like standing out to me. I mean, there's many bands doing exactly this. But then, yeah, a good show, enthusiastic attitudes, and some good music. Yeah, that was nice as an opener. So good. And then Therion, I mean, I think everybody knows that I'm not the biggest fan of that symphonic female fronted.
You're not.
And although, no. And
it's not a secret anymore, so.
No, I said it's not really a secret.
No.
But then again, I mean, for Therion, their ladies are not really officially kind of part of the lineup. I have no idea how that is, but I think they're mainly doing live and still record stuff on the album, but not being permanent or something. But yeah, two ladies, one of them had been with them for many years, but then had a gap of 10 years and she was back on tour with them now. So everybody was cheerful about that. And then the person who doesn't like this kind of music still managed to stick out the whole set of 1 hour and 45 minutes plus.
That's an achievement.
Standing in the front.
So they did something very well.
They did have a very good show, I think. I mean, musically, I would not necessarily put their albums on, but there's many, many people who will.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand why, because their songs are well thought. And yeah, even though there's like, what, seven people on the stage in front of you, you still know that everyone has their own identity, their own clothing style even. And yet it all comes together. I like that. Everyone has their own time to shine a little bit. At one moment it's the guitarist stepping up front, then you can see the vocals getting more attention, the ladies themselves being duetting, of course, and then Thomas comes in. It all comes together, and that's really well done. Of course, they have so much experience. I think this album was, what, like 26th or whatever. Like, I mean, they have countless releases, and it was also interesting to see that the tour is actually coming for the album that's closing the trilogy of the Leovigian trilogy. Mm-hmm. And I would have expected the set to be more about that, but they kind of dug into their discography and go back many years and actually took songs from many albums. And I think, was it maybe one or two from the last one only? So it was really a diverse set. And they actually played also a lot of the classics, that they even announced that, like, it's time for some classic songs that have been with them for a long time. So yeah, that was good. I remember when I was posting the review online that I asked other people, like, oh, have you seen them? Did you like it? That I got one response of somebody who went to see their show in Berlin. And she said that the audience wasn't very participating with the band. Yeah, I can relate a little bit to that. I mean, it wasn't a very wild audience. But at the same time, I must say, I think if you look around, the venue was filled with people who obviously have been following this band for a long time.
Yeah.
Therefore also being a little bit older. So they're not being like teenage wild anymore.
Jumping up and down, circle pit building. You know, people enjoying the band, you know. We can still stand there and nod our heads and have a good time. I mean.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And in the front, there were still some very fanatic people, of course, but not like super, super wild or something. So, yay. I mean, I think it's just a different kind of audience than the teenage bands that you, for example, have been seeing.
Teenage bands?
Yeah, well, I mean, but like, Therion has been around for so long, so it's it makes sense that these fans grow along with them.
Yes, of course. I mean,
yeah. And it was really nice to now finally see them for real, like after having a very good interview with them.
I can imagine.
So you, festival.
Yes, last Saturday I went to a doom stoner fuzzy rock. Festival, indoor festival. I think there were 12 bands. The thing what you know, I already let you know, the thing I noticed was that in the bands, that how they present themselves, of course, stoner music is more about the music and not about, you know, how they entertain the audience on stage. So there were a few bands where the musicians were just standing and doing their thing. But then also the lights were a little, hardly there. So it was all a little, I don't know, maybe I had to smoke some weed to get a little bit more, you know, going
into the zone.
into the zone, yes. So not all the bands were my thing, but it was kind of funny because it started around lunchtime, and it was actually already quite crowded. I just thought, like, normally when you go to a whole day, there's like the first two bands, you know, they play for a handful of people. Yeah. But it was actually already crowded. I was like, huh? So there's definitely a market for this. There was a good vibe around the festival, and I've also seen some very nice bands next to the more less in the bands that made less of an impression. So I like to mention Black Rainbows.
Okay. Yeah.
They played quite a good show. Played on the main stage. They were not that entertaining, but still, yeah, I think the music was a little bit more mainstream. But I don't know. I think the whole audience was sucked right in, and they took us on their soundscapes. It was really nice. And then the band I really liked was Truck Fighters. They're from Sweden. They had an amazing show. The only thing that, because they didn't play it as a headliner, there were still two bands playing after them. But because they were so explosive, they had a really good light show. They were entertaining. And in contrast with all the bands that were just standing still on the stage, it was like a huge difference. Oh. And then the two bands after them, there was a Dutch band, Rex. They played really well and skilled, but I think the audience was a little mellow after the Truck Fighters because it was such a, you know, it was such a change.
Yeah.
And then the headliner was Graveyard. They play great music, but also...
Yeah, static.
I think it was a kind... It's about the music, definitely. But it was a little... I think for me, they get a little lost after the Truck Fighters. They were so enthusiastic that everything seems to fit. The audience went wild. There was circle pits. There was jumping. It was everything. And then, you know, you change back to... just grooving onto the music. It's nice, but I don't know. It was, for me, if the bands would have changed, I think it was better fitting. But of course, Graveyard is more known. So that's a choice to make for the organizers, you know? And then another band that I quite liked was Acid Mammoth. They played the smaller hall.
Okay.
It was crowded. It was hot. It was very nice bass lines. There was a lot of nice bass lines, by the way. So yeah, it was nice. Just to find out a little bit new bands for me.
Okay, well, in that sense... Okay. Oh, okay, okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, then that becomes... yeah. I did get the new Acid Mammoth album in the email. Yep. Well, maybe we can pick it up for the next episode to talk about. That could be a thing. It would be nice if I at one time pick an album that you actually like. Yeah, and I do my best to find them. But yeah, now the better season is coming, so good for that. Okay. And then, oh yeah, I wanted to ask one thing. You did manage to see a little bit of the first act there, Zila? And because I think they're a bit different. They're different. Yeah, heavier, darker. Um, Yeah, definitely. Because usually they play with black metal bands. I think more sludge bit compared to the names that I know from their lineup, yeah. Yeah, I think so, because they're kind of like a rising star at the moment, so. Yeah. In the hall. The music, though. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah, good, good, good. Yeah. Cool. Nice. Good to hear. Let's see, because we of course have been listening to a couple albums for this episode as well. Which one shall we start with? Maybe Body Farm? Yes. That's exactly. It's a bit death metal from the city Amersfoort. So I've been familiar with this band for quite a while. I think they were founded in 2009 or something, and I've seen them around quite some times. I always pitch them a little bit to if to outside, friends from outside of the Netherlands if they happen to be in the area where they will be playing, because I think. If I listen to their live shows, I think that they're doing a good job with that. Like, if you look at the genre internationally, they might not be like at the po at this point being like top level or something, but definitely far above average for me.
Yes, that was actually what I thought. I mean, you put it in our shared folder to listen to, and I saw they were D Dutch. And honestly, I don't know a lot of death from the Netherlands. Maybe also because a lot of what I did hear, well, of course, I
Yeah.
know all those bands like
They're going to be
Pestilence
on
and all
tour
those
with
older
Pestilence.
stuff, but I think I saw that, yes. So what you said
Yeah.
about the level of quality is actually one of the things that struck me when listening to this album. It
Yeah.
was actually a lot better than I expected. Yeah. So I was surprised by that. It was actually, I thought it was actually you know, if it would be like international an
Yeah.
international album, I would believed it, you
Yeah,
know.
definitely. I think they did a really good job with this album,
Yep.
and I think they will definitely have opportunities to play more abroad other than what they have already planned. I always like when I see this band live also that they have a very energetic live show, and that's something I really hear back in this album. You can really feel what they're doing there compare live also back on the album, and that's also a very big pro with me.
Yes, I found it funny that there was like four new tracks and then five
Yeah.
a little bit older songs, but they were recorded last year, so they're sort of live recorded. So you get a little more,
Yeah.
yeah, you get a little bit more of a vibe how it would be live. And it was funny because there was not. Sometimes when you hear a live album, you instantly hear it's different, you know. Not per se like quality wise, but something.
Yeah.
But actually, this was like in line with each other. So this also amazed me,
Yeah.
and it made me really curious about them live. Yeah, and I think what I liked about it is even though it's like death. Metal and the growls are usually a bit more how do you say, sharper? I actually felt that at places there was like a sort of a round warm feeling in it.
Yeah.
It was like actually embracing me more than I'm kind of known of death metal. Or black, I think there was.
Yeah, true. And what I've also thought is that the album flows really nice. I mean, you can easily put it on and in no time you think like, oh, it's over already. Mm-hmm. Wow, that went fast. Did I miss something? I need to listen again. So, yeah.
Yes.
I want more. Yeah.
Why did it end already? I want more.
It's called Malicious Ecstasy and it will be out, I think, soonish. Is it out already? Let me quickly check because... Yeah, March 22nd, it's going to be out. Yeah.
Did you have a favorite track of it?
Maybe...
A few.
I liked The Swamp, but also the first track, Retaliate, I liked also very much. They were just like, it clicks.
Well, it's no surprise that I liked Gates of... and I can pronounce this word, Malignancy.
Yeah.
Because it has a really nice bass intro, so that really sparks my attention. Can't help it. But the song is also really nice. So, yes. I think they did a really great
and
job.
I'm sure
and I'm looking forward to see them live.
We will come across them soon. That's just a no-brainer. Good. Then we have a second album that we were listening to. And it's completely different. Yes. It's the Finnish band Blind Channel. And they also released a new album soon. Because that's what I selected. It's released on Century Media. So yeah, that says a lot, I guess. That they will get enough support to tour with it. They will do a couple of large shows. And I can imagine, because Europe has already gotten to know this band a little bit from Eurovision. There we go again.
Yes.
Participated with the pre-selection in 2021 and then they kind of won. And that was it the first year in Rotterdam? I think so. Because of the COVID years, we had it twice. I think it's the, I don't know. Anyway, they saw our beautiful city and played the Eurovision, ended up sixth. And now they're here with this album. And what do you think of it, Elvira? I'm curious.
Well, what I wrote down is, you know, knowing them from Eurovision, I don't know how many years that has been, but one thing that still struck me with it was their energy on that stage. They're really captivating. And I think this album is in line with that. Not saying they still doing the same thing, but it's, you know, what you expect you will get. It's really energetic. It's I think maybe that's the charm of the band, actually. And it's kind of interesting for me that they seem to be able to keep that energy from the first second, from the first few seconds of the album. It's high. And there's a few slower, more like ballady, starting like a ballad sort of flow in the middle. And then it goes back up, high energy. And I think the production on this album,
Definitely. It's
really, they paid a lot of attention to it. It's high quality. And I think it's kind of funny because it's not, how do you say that? It's not like standard metal. It's more... there's like electro and synthesizers, computer created sounds, but it's also catchy as hell. They have a lot of great melody and hooks. I mean, from the first time listening, you have these catchy phrase lines in your head, you know?
Yeah. I think when I was listening, the first song that I heard from this album, I was thinking, oh, it sounds a little bit like Mindless Self-Indulgence, like electro punk-ish kind of band from back then, like, and then they switched it around back to more metal. I was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, interesting. I mean, Blind Channel, I've seen them live when they were like in the early years. They played, I think, somewhere at Tuska probably, but I've seen them live there, and I remembered that they had that energy already there. But I think it's
nice.
still a huge difference with what I see now. So they have been growing a lot in the past years. And I think being on that Eurovision stage kind of does something, because you have to think big. So, yeah. I think I can hear that back in the album. They have taken their time and think big.
Yeah, definitely. I think also it's kind of funny because there's these, you know, I can understand that people that are more into like maybe hip hop or pop rock music, they get interested in this album as well. But then it's not, I wouldn't say it's like easy metal, because there's a lot of, you know, sharp and heavy breakdowns and a lot of these actually good metal moments as well.
It has very fast parts as well. It's not like, it doesn't stay in one tempo all the time. I like that.
No, I think it's actually quite interesting how and maybe also admirable how they fused all this together.
Especially the vocals are, not completely my thing. I think it addresses a younger audience more than it would me. But I think the first things I said to it about to you also was like, yeah, if you switch off the vocals, it's amazing album to listen to. And yeah, for me, the vocals are just not my thing. It's more towards a younger audience. But
yes, especially when you they have this song. Well, that says it all,
isn't it? I would say Gossip Girl.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about Gossip Girl as well, but that's also maybe not our age thing, but
hey,
we're a little bit older than I think their Siri target audience.
Completely popular again because Netflix took it up, so it's a kind of a reborn. Yeah, okay. The new generation is into it.
but even though I think that a lot of younger people will be it's more their thing, I think. They're also teamed up with a singer from England, I believe, on one of the tracks. But at the same time, I think, as older metal listeners, we can have our opinions about this type of music. But I think in the end, we will all be nodding our heads along. Because I think this album makes you do that. So I think, it's not, I wouldn't put it on myself a lot. It's not my thing. I think they're great live. To have in a festival lineup, they bring a little bit of difference to the table.
Like I said, I think they're very good bridge bands to introduce people from other genres towards more metal music. I think they're typically a band that does that for the genre. So I can see them being around for quite a while like this. Yeah.
And the thing is, there are not 100 other bands.
True.
That are doing
That's
the same
true.
Thing.
I mean, this genre they are doing is, at the moment, getting a little bit extra attention, I guess. I can see a lot of the bands like them being around. But they do set themselves apart, so that's good.
Yes.
All right, enough about that album then, I guess. Let's talk a little bit about the news and Musicland. We've been noticing that the last couple of weeks, there were quite some messages of band members leaving a band or being fired by a band sometimes, in some of the cases, not all of them. And that's only being made public after the fans asked about it on social media. Like, where is this person? Well, can you clarify? So, yeah. I started to wonder a little bit, like, how far goes the responsibility of a band to keep their fans informed about this happening?
Mm-hmm.
And what right does a fan have to know about the lineup of the band if they're buying a concert ticket? So yeah, what's your opinion?
Yeah. Well, of course, I've been thinking about this when you brought it up. And I think there's two things, you know. There's like how should a band inform their fans about lineup changes? At some point, they maybe have to, because... But I also saw a few... Well, I didn't saw all these bands, their announcements or the fans commenting, but I saw a few of them. And they were actually sort of targeting the remaining band, like blaming them for not telling. But the thing is, you know, you never know why someone leaves a band. Sometimes it's they get fired. Sometimes it's their own decision. Sometimes they've been in a band for God knows how many years and they want something else, something new in their life. So, and then you don't know how someone actually leaves a band. Maybe sometimes it's, you know, it's been talked over and over with the band and it's been communicated for a long time and they actually known there was going to be a point where this band member is going to leave the band. But I can also imagine that sometimes maybe right in front of a tour, someone says, you know what, just fuck it, I've had enough. You just don't know. Mm. So, and then is it the responsibility of the remaining band to tell it? Or is it the responsibility of the artist who is leaving to make an announcement about it? So I find it very difficult. And then there's the thing, should the band inform fans?
You should at least mention someone is not in the band anymore, but the reason for it doesn't always have to be made public, to my opinion.
No.
But, I mean, I think agree. If you look at how bands are marketing themselves now, it's also very much more personal than, like, in the 80s, for example. With social media, people are showing more of themselves online to get a closer connection to their fans. And then people get like a more closer relationship with their with their band that they like. And then, you know, they get excited by a concert ticket only then to hear that what they liked does not exist anymore. So, yeah, I can imagine that people kind of want to know. And if there's rumors, it's I think better to just say, okay, at this point... he might not be a band member anymore, or even just say we will give some explanation a little bit later. That's then you say at least something. But I mean, in a time where you use that relationship to market your music, because I mean it's all about the money in the end, and they want their music to be sold, they want their concerts to be filled with the fans, which is why they start these connections on social media, like accepting fans. You can also just decide to close off your account and keep it private, but no, they want to be public, they want their fans to be part of their lives, and then suddenly you kind of lock somebody out. You just only want them for the money, but when it's inconvenient you kind of don't want to say anything. That's a little bit of a point that I have against it. I mean, there should be a balance in that, I think. Like, keep it a business by just mentioning that somebody might not be part of the band anymore. But you don't have to go into depth about reasons, I guess, if somebody doesn't want to share that.
Yeah,
at
but
least
I think,
mention to them.
I think it doesn't really matter for, you know, rumors or talk. If a band mentions like, hey, you know what, our drummer is not going to be on this tour, they've informed the fans that the drummer is not there. But there's going to be rumors anyway, you know. So I don't think, especially in fans, they put their artists on a pillar or a statue, and there's like, they're mine. You know, and they have their, and even though when these artists are not maybe, they may be on the foreground in the band on their social media, but not in their own profile. So I don't know.
I don't know. It's, I mean,
I'm lucky I'm not in a band and I don't have to face this ever. Cause I think it's kind of tricky. It's, you know, I do agree that at some point a band should inform people, you know. It's weird if you go on tour and people see there's not a person is missing, and then you go on for weeks and you don't even mention, like, oh, maybe he's ill, maybe he's has other duties, maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I mean, I think especially if people spend money on that, might be that. I mean, mm-hmm. there's also fans who like one person specifically because they're person. Like a drummer yeah. themselves and want to be like want to look at their hero, that specific drummer, and then they buy tickets. I don't know, maybe even go for the VIP, and then bam, he's not even on tour. Like,
that sucks.
I mean,
Oh yeah, definitely. I didn't think about the VIP, the VIP when you oh my god, you buy a ticket for like 80 to 100 euros.
Oh, that's even a cheap one.
You finally get this autograph. You finally get this autograph, and then the person is not there. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think many fans are kind of already aware that he's missing. You're too late by
you have
telling.
To.
Like,
yes.
Yeah, that should have been a bit earlier. That why should you piss people off like that? But yeah.
So I think we kind of agree that a band has a certain responsibility into mentioning if something happens in a lineup, but I think we also agree that personal,
Of course.
And sometimes they don't have to share why, how, or...
Please keep the dirty laundry where they belong. I mean, I don't need to know all the details. That doesn't have to be... I mean, I was looking quickly through some news messages to see a couple of the people that left their bands, or whether they left or fired, not all, that's a variety of there. I can go through them in a little bit. First I came across this one story about a band. I think they were called Lorena or something, if I remember correctly. And that was a story that they completely shared. And I was like, whoa, that's so bizarre. There was this one band member who apparently had a crush on the wife of another band member. And...
Okay, juicy.
Yeah, that guy has was apparently owning a gym. So he had access to a lot of like pre-workout stuff and other, I don't know, materials. Let's call it like that. Apparently... when he was at some point very drunk, he admitted to some band member or even the band member in question, I don't know, that he had been mixing the pre-workouts that he was giving his band member hormones to transition to a female. So he would look like more manly and could meet, cut together with the wife of that guy.
God.
Yeah. I was like...
That's sick.
It's sick. And apparently he shared that he was doing that in some drunk moments. And oh my God, it's insane. Of course, the band then, the guy in question had health issues already. So they have been spending... like thousands of euros to find out what was going on, and now he knows. So he had still some of the gifted pre-workouts left, which he now is getting tested to know exactly what he has been getting.
God.
Yeah, so he now has to go to a lot of doctors.
That's like a scandal. That's not.
Yeah. No, but the band themselves posted that in several stories that were then shared on this news website about what was going on and why this person is not being part of the band anymore. I'm like, whoa.
I would classify this as too much information.
Yes. too much info, but also fucking insane.
Why?
Whoa. That's... Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
I think it's a very valid reason to break up with that band member.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But, oh my god. Anyway, let's go down through the list that I quickly got together when going to the news sites. And I have this list made because I could form a new band with all of the band members. So,
yeah, just a suggestion
just
there.
Just a hint, maybe. Also because I think these bands kind of know each other from touring around. And the genres are not super far apart. There's all something melodic in there, in a way. So, it could be done.
Well, drop them.
Yes, so the drummer of Apocalyptica, the guitarist of Insomnium, the vocalist of Adema, the bassist of Flesh God Apocalypse, and he's also doing backing vocals, and then the guitarist of Sabaton. Sounds like a perfect band to me.
Yeah, be fun, yes.
Well, to be fair, I think, was it the Flesh God Apocalypse guy was quitting for educational reasons? I think he wanted to study something or so, if I remember correctly.
And yeah, I think I saw that.
I think
too.
The Sabbath.
Yeah, that he was the last years. I know, you know, you have to.
I think he wanted to go to be a doctor.
When you're in a band, yes. And I think when you're in a band, at some point, you're not earning your whole yearly income by playing in a band. So you have to do something else. And he had another passion, how do you call it?
I don't know.
Being a doctor. How do you. Medical.
Oh, I'm not.
He had like a medical
I'm
passion.
I'm not sure.
I think he was.
I went.
Or was it a difference?
I think doctorate.
Anyway,
doctor
read,
as in university level doctor, meaning. I'm not sure if it was medical actually.
Oh, I thought I. Well, maybe there's another
bass player
somewhere.
He's just a
smart
guy, you know.
Yes, but I can understand at some point, you know, you've seen, you've toured, you've seen it, you've and. You get older and you want something else in life.
Yeah, possible. And I think for Sabaton, the guy left because he wanted to spend more time with his family and, instead of being with the band.
Touring the whole
world. I can imagine at some point you make that decision. So, yeah. But so it just found it funny that I quickly went to the list and combined with these. And I was
form
like,
a band.
Oh, that looks like a band. Okay.
Well, maybe if they're not forming a band, they can at least record one song for us.
Yeah, just for the sake of it.
Yes. That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good, then let's move on. Yeah. We have the All About the Bass next. Okay, All About the Bass. What do we have this time?
So this time I'm very excited. We have Damien Sisson from Death Angel.
Ooh, Death Angel. Yes. I like Death Angel. Yeah, I mean, they're always cool in festivals and such. And I think they're probably one of my favorites from all the classics.
Mm, definitely, yeah.
I mean, I think Death Angel is one of the classics.
Yeah. Well, I always...
Prove me wrong, people.
I always remember our... I don't know if we talked about this in one of the first podcasts, but I remember the... We were at a festival standing in the backstage and they were playing. And then their singer just broke up the whole set, ran off stage, yelled something that he had to pee. And he ran past us like, where's the toilet? And then we pointed somewhere. And then one and a half minute later, he ran back on stage and continued the set. And it was like, yeah, I don't know. I will never, ever forget that.
Yeah, I mean, I always like their positive vibes if
yes.
I see them live, so good.
Yeah, well, I like their bass, of course. That's why I asked Damien. What I like about it, in my perspective, it always grooves a little bit, which is not that common form thrash metal.
Mm. Yeah, I guess so.
So I asked him a little introduction. So we asked Damien Sisson from Death Angel. It is a California-based thrash metal band. They got started in the 80s and Damien joined the band in 2009. Since then, they have released 4 studio albums and 2 live albums. He started playing bass in high school already. Well, it's one of those times that many people start to pick up an instrument. And he was drawn to Black Sabbath, Metallica, Rush, and Iron Maiden, talking about classics. He played in countless original and cover bands before he got introduced to the thrash metal world and to Death Angel. And since he has toured several countries and several times, and right now they are in the process of following up their Grammy-nominated Humanist album, and they are about to embark on a three-week Latin America tour in April.
Ooh.
Yes.
They have wild fans, I hear, there, so...
Definitely.
Always nice. Yeah.
So, I asked him to tell us something about the beginning, and when he started playing, that he remembers, like, something he was practicing, if he struggled, or, well, those early days when he picked up the bass guitar, and he said he shares that when he began playing bass, he had a few friends who'd already been playing music for a few years before him, and that he had to play, you know, catch up.
I can imagine that if you're like very competitive, that you kind of like want to be at least at their level or better.
Better. so he said, well, it was, I think you see that in those American movies, you know, when they're, he says that after school, they go over to whoever house parents weren't at home and they jam their instruments there. And oftentimes it was his house or a friend who lived up the street. And I have to think about those American movies, you know, where the kids play in their garage and you see those big lawns and a lot of noise coming from the garage.
True. But then again, I mean, when I grew up, I was lucky that we had such a space in our house as well. Mm, so nice. I can totally imagine that people coming by, like, just hang around, do stuff.
So then about actually playing, he says, and I quote him here, he says, I can specifically learning Fly By Night from Rush and thinking I was pretty hot stuff because everyone knew Rush at that time and he thought that it was advanced level musicianship. So of course there's quite a difference between learning Fly By Night versus something like YYZ from Rush as well, which I would eventually try and tackle. However, a big milestone was actually learning Metallica of Cliff Burton's Anesthesia, Pulling Teeth. I knew the song was too challenging for my level of playing, so I just tried to learn a few bars of the song a day, and then the following day a few more bars, and then so on until about a month I was finally able to string the song together. Playing that in front of my buddies in the garage definitely felt like a milestone.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I can imagine you being all proud when you finally got it done.
Yes.
Yeah. But hey, good for that persistence. I mean, not everybody has that you keep going with it. So, yes. Yay.
And trying to remember Geese's Butlers from Black Sabbath's basically in... intro to NIB felt like an accomplishment as well, but major paradigms were shattered when he'd first heard Victor Wooten's cover of Stevie Wonder's Overjoyed from the debut album Show of Hands. The solo, unaccompanied bass, I never thought it could sound so full and beautiful and expressive. Victor Wooten did for my generation what I imagined Jaco Pastorius, if I pronounce that name right, had done for the previous generation of bass players.
Ah, that's cool.
Yeah.
And now he's doing it for, I don't know, the next generation, perhaps?
Perhaps, yes. Who knows? So I also asked him, that was a little bit about how he started and how he got into playing bass. And I also asked him if there's like something from another artist at the moment or in the past that he admires and that we should check out, of course. And he says, sticking with the classics that got me into music, I'd have to list Rush, Digital Man and Analog Kid. I found it curious that both of those songs were featured on the Signals album, and yet it is not on a concept album, and the songs aren't intended to relate to each other, and yet both songs look at technology in terms of human growth. That aside, both are essentially bass solos throughout the song. They both start off with intense and intricate bass playing that is unique to the Geddy Lee and Neil Peart, sorry, names. Their interplay and very few of the bass licks repeat, actually. So Rush have always been great at subtle and grand nuance. And just because you learned one of the verses, very rarely there are two verses played the same. So there is always like little changes. So it's hard to practice, I think, you know, to master it. Like you say, mm-hmm. you have to be persistent to...
Yeah.
So they make little changes. So not only do they challenge the finger dexterity, but also the mental acuity. So, sorry.
Yeah. Well, what I think is funny, if you hear those titles also, like, usually, I mean, you said Digital Man.
Yeah.
And Analog Kid.
Mm-hmm.
You would expect that, like, the other way around. Because... younger ones go more with technology, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unless it's a money issue, perhaps.
Yeah, Digital Kid and Analog Man. But it was... Rush has been old.
Yeah.
It's not from this time, you know?
So no,
it's
true.
Even...
Yeah. So maybe it was the money thing then, because I think nowadays you see mainly the child being more technology savvy than the parents or... older generation.
Well, he continues because he admires a little bit more. Of course, mm-hmm. there's going to be a lot more. But he says, and this is, I find it quite funny. However, he continues, I would also have to mention that Bach, Cello Suite number 1 in G major, is a nearly perfect example of implied harmony. The cello, like bass, rarely plays more than two notes simultaneously, and so there is a whole composition of solo cello, unaccompanied, and the amount of implicit melody and harmony almost turns the listener into a musician, in that it becomes so easy to imagine hearing and listening counterpoint melodies and harmonies that aren't actually being played. Much like Victor Wooten's playing of Overjoyed, here is a piece of music that doesn't need the support of accompanying instruments to communicate a feeling. Understanding why these pieces of music have lasted decades is a great case study for one's own musical development.
Yeah, I think that is a thing that the classical music does
mm-hmm.
for many people. And I think it's cool that it's inspiring people to still play that kind of music too, you know? Like I said to you, was it yesterday, that Max Lilja from
mm-hmm.
early Apocalyptica is doing a solo album considering about Bach. So,
yeah.
I'm curious to see what his interpretation is and how that relates to this comment.
Yes.
Like,
well, I can understand, because I'm not a big fan of the piano by Bach, but the cello, actually,
no.
I can really understand what he means by, you know, it's just one cello, but you get so captivated by that one instrument that only plays one or two notes at the same time. I feel I need to keep listening to it, and there's not a whole band, you know?
Yeah, true.
It's just one instrument, and I think that's exactly, I think he has a point there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is like that you can really focus on the details mm-hmm. in there instead of getting lost in the mess. So I think that plays a big part in it.
Yes. So then I asked him, because we got on talking a little bit more. I asked him about something he wrote himself that he is proud of. And if he could share a little bit of how it came together. And he said, well, as a musician and someone who communicates through music, I may always feel that my best music has yet to be released, or maybe even yet to be written. So I still feel the best is yet to come. I think a lot of musicians say that, actually. I think it's... But it's good, you know, it keeps them, driven to create more and develop as a musician.
True, and I think that that's important. Otherwise, you can also retire. And...
yes.
Yeah.
Please don't.
No, exactly. But you don't. You don't want to keep listening to the same over and over again, right?
Because then the albums they're going to be a copy of what's already been there. So yeah. But looking back at my musical journey, there are songs on every album that hold more personal value. On Relentless Retribution, I felt Opponents at Sides and Volcanic featured some of my less traditional playing, as well as struck an emotional chord that resonated with me. And most recently, on Humanicide, I thought The Day That I Walked Away had some grooving parts, and Aggressor had a nice feature in the middle. And oftentimes in thrash metal, there really isn't much room for bass compositions. So very often bass has a very fundamental role. And so more than try and stuff the music with a good bass riff and licks, I try and focus on a consistent and reliable sound. Laying something down that can be felt evenly throughout the song and maybe enhance the rhythm and syncopation of the song. But I don't often need to add a little bit more clay to the sculpture. More so, I just refine what's already there and highlight hooks that already exist in music. Though it may not be as enviable as a Eddie Van Halen guitar solo, being able to retain a little groove and bounce in thrash metal has really become my speciality. Keeping a little booty shake in the otherwise aggressive atmosphere has been my contribution to thrash metal bass.
Haha, booty shake, oh dear. Yeah.
So next time...
I can see us like, we go and shake that booty at the gig. Oh, how do you call that again?
The barrier?
No, the shaking of the booty that all these hip-hop people do.
Twerking.
Whatever.
Twerking?
Twerking. Twerking, yeah. That's...
So next time...
Whatever. Sorry, I'm a metalhead.
Yeah. So next time, all the bass fans.
I headbang usually.
Next time, all the bass fans turn around and they start shaking their booties. That's a bass player.
It would be a practical joke if the entire photo pit would be doing that, just like for a sec. Like, I think that he would be like.
But I agree with him. That is what I said in the introduction. I definitely think he brings a little groove into the thrash metal. I definitely like that in their songs. Groove.
Yeah. I think Death Angel really is a band that you can listen to for that as well. It has always a good balance in the songs with everything. I like that. It's not like somebody is there, but you barely notice because the guitars are overplaying everything or something. Mm-hmm. So that's what I like about Death Angel. There's always a good balance.
Yeah, definitely. They all have their moments to shine.
Yeah.
And groove.
Angry and shake that booty.
Yes. So next time, people, we know what to do. And to end this, I also ask him if he has some tips for our bass playing listeners. And he says, when deciding to pursue music, I think it's important to get into the sincere reasons, to get into it for the sincere reasons. I see many people wanting to join the party and being the guy on stage, and entertainers and performers are that, performing and entertaining. But for me, music is communication and expression, and not some elite group of fraternity of exclusivity. So playing music should be about passion and not position. Having said this, I recommend specifically always to work with a metronome. The metronome is the truth. And your riff song part only makes sense if you can play it to a tempo. The metronome will tell you whether you got part in the pocket or not. Because if the metronome doesn't sound like it's grooving and ain't in the pocket yet, it ain't in the pocket yet. I also recommend listening to many styles of music. Listening to other music won't diminish your style or negatively impact your image. It will allow one to have more tools in their every arsenal so they can remain fresh and inspired. And he has an example of that Bruce Lee once studied fencing, wrestling, and military combat so he could become a better expert at Kung Fu. He observed and learned from other forms of martial arts, but then specifically applied this to his own style of Kung Fu. And I think musicians can benefit from this type of mindset and give them an ability to recreate fresh and unique music. And lastly, so he actually got three tips. You can't get around the process of practicing your instrument, so learn to love the process. Enjoy learning about your instrument and music. Have fun making mistakes, but discipline is necessary for progress. And not every day is an inspired day. But if you can pick up your instrument for at least a few minutes every day and go over something you're working on, progress is inevitable. Progress is about micro-disciplines and accumulating over time, rather than grand gestures that are seldom. Slow and steady wins the race, and consistency is key.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think those are really good tips.
Yes.
And yeah, a good motivation for people trying to learn on how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And a wake-up call that practice simply is part of what you have to do.
Yeah. I get a little itchy easy when listening to a metronome, you know, like tick, 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 tick.
yeah, but then again...
I always started putting my focus on the thing and not on the metronome and not on what I was playing, so... Yeah.
I think it's also you get used to it. Like, mm-hmm. for example, I mean, I have one very old stand-up clock in our old house that was made by my great-grandfather. And people always say, oh, don't you wake up from the sound that that makes mm-hmm. when every hour the clock is making its little sound? And I'm like,
no.
What sound? You know? I know it's there, but I just don't seem to hear it consciously. I mean, it becomes part of you. So, and that's, I think, perfect for this metronome if it becomes part of you.
Then
you're good, right?
Yes.
Then you nail it.
Yes. Well, I understand what he means by, you know, if you follow the metronome, you have to keep following the metronome exactly, and you're too busy with the instead of you, when you master it, you can put, you know, you can like let go a little bit, and then the groove starts coming mm-hmm. in, I think, because you're not focused on the...
True.
Yeah.
But that, like I said, if that thing becomes in your system, then... Yeah, you can work with it.
Yes, I think so too. And of course, about the practicing, you know, it's... I think you said that already, you know, you have to have a certain level of discipline.
Yeah, definitely.
You can't pick up an instrument and think, you know, next year I'm going to be on stage rocking the whole world.
Yeah. Some people just want to wear a costume and pretend.
Yes, definitely. They should be a singer then, because...
Or join a power metal band, maybe.
Sorry.
That's mean. There are very good players in there.
Definitely,
in
that genre, definitely.
We all know what we're talking about, right?
Yes. So, but there was Damien and... talking about bass. Thank you so much, Damien, for being willing to participate in this. I hope we inspired a few people with your answers. I would recommend everybody, if Death Angel is around, go see them. Go find out if you hear the groove in their music. Of course, we will... pick a few of the songs he mentions in this conversation to our playlist.
In Spotify.
Yes.
So, yeah, thanks a lot. And Death Angel is always worth your money. So when they're around, simply buy the ticket and go to the show.
Yes.
Then move on to the Ikigai. What makes us happy this week? I think I can share one. I am happy that I got an invite for a music meeting, like networking event kind of here in the local area. And I found it very funny that they found me. It doesn't seem to be metal related that much, more like general music, not specifically metal. So, yeah, I'm probably gonna be there a little bit on Saturday and see what kind of people I can get to meet and see what we can do locally. Being a promoter for metal, I guess. Oh, yeah, and maybe a little bit of also happiness, but also news. I mean, I already shared that I will be going to the Infernal Music Conference. But I have also got the confirmation that I will be photographing there. So, yay! You will be hearing lots and seeing lots about this festival. Good. What makes you happy?
I think it makes me happy that I noticed there are so many bands touring right now. It's like insane. There's so many small clubs around the Netherlands and Belgium. And there's evening and evening. Like, I don't know. Back in the days, there was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, sometimes Sunday. And maybe, you know. But now, I don't know how or why. But even on, I see, like, huge ass bands on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Like, and not just like a few bands, but yeah, like all the places. There's something every evening. Maybe it's because of Corona and we all had to stay inside. The bands had to cancel all the tours. And we're still so damn happy that we can go out. And the bands are so happy they can be on a stage again. But it's kind of funny. I don't think I've seen it that crowded, that busy in the last years.
Yeah, I guess so. I think also maybe because it's a bit harder for venues to earn money on events is that they just have to do more to get the same numbers.
Yeah.
Not only in people, but also in money.
Because,
definitely. Of course, for them, the costs are also much higher. So maybe that's also.
But it makes me happy to see those many, many bands touring. I mean,
but
it makes me happy.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, then we have the playlist. Anything you want to.
My playlist have been.
That you've been listening to?
I don't think I've been listening anything. Well, of course, I've been listening to Light Channel and Body Form. But other than that, it's just been in the car, it's been the same old albums. Alice in Chains, Amorphis. Actually I put Barren Earth in there as well. And there's been Caius, driving to work and back home. And I think on my computer there's Spotify saying what I'm listening, so that's I've been listening to Moon Coven and Catatonia, so it's still the same. Apparently, I'm a very consistent listener at the moment.
Oh, well. Well, with so many new albums coming out, you might fall in love with one of them soon. Yeah. Well, then, I have been listening to the Avicii album that is going to that will be out when you hear it already. This already. Yeah, for us recording it, it will be tomorrow. So then it will be last Friday for all the listeners. I've, of course, heard the album already quite some times before because I was interviewing the band. And yeah, so you will see my review coming up soon. I'm not going to spoil too much. Then I've been listening to a new EP from Before the Dawn because it came in recently. Ah, and I kind of like it. I can tell a little bit about it because I'm not sure if I've time to go in depth on the review anyway. It's called Archaic Flame. And the first track reminded me to Black Sun Aeon a little bit. Not completely vocal-wise, but the song. Yeah, that's Tuomas's other band project. But I think that one is kind of put down now. And whatever. I'm not following at all. But then there was one other track that just reminded me to some of the older work that Before the Dawn has been doing. Then they had a little cover, and that made me smile. It's funny because people in the area where I live now kind of start to know me as the person who hates cover bands. It's like in this area, they have a lot of festivals with cover bands, a lot of rock and metal cover bands that have various shows here around. And people always ask me, do you want to go to this festival with the cover bands? I'm like, no, I don't like cover bands. Sorry, I'd rather see the real deal. But this cover, I don't know, I kind of liked it. It was not too close to the original, but not too far from it either. And it's Run to You from Bryan Adams. Done by Before the Dawn. So that's a...
Oh,
Yeah.
That's curious.
I'm not a big fan, but
I like the Bryan Adams.
It's good enough to listen to, and I found it an interesting choice from the guys. So yeah, and the last one is a Dying Sun live version. I mean, it's just one of those songs you love hearing live, so it's always good to have a recorded live version of that as well. So yeah, those were the songs that I've been listening to, and I have much more to listen to, but time is catching up on me, man. I have so much to do for the website that I don't always have the time to go into depth reviews too much. So for now, I think it's time to close off and ask people again, if they still haven't subscribed, to please do so. Follow our socials, follow our website, everywhere. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple, we're on Podbean, we're on Podimo, we're on Amazon, we're everywhere. So there's no excuse for you not to subscribe and follow us. And if you really think we're missing somewhere, you can just drop us a line and we'll see if it's possible to get on there as well. Okay, thank you, and see you in the next one. Bye.
See you. Bye.